welcome to the Frommer Travel Show. I'm your host, Pauline Frommer. What are the most popular cruises for 2024? That sounds like it should be an unanswerable question, but my next guest has done a study to decide just that question. He is Bob Levenstein. He is the CEO of Cruise Compete. Hey, Bob, welcome to the Frommer Travel Show.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
So tell our listeners a little bit about Cruise Compete so they understand why you have a basis for making these types of decisions or comments.
Oh, you bet. Well, Cruise Compete is an online cruise marketplace. We've been out there for more than 20 years now, if you can believe it.
Wow.
And the way it works is the consumer, if you're looking for a cruise, you come to our site. We have a lot of tools to help you figure out what cruise you want to take. And then you can create what we call a quote request, where basically you tell us, I want to be on this cruise, on this date, in this type of cabin. And as soon as you enter that, we have over 500 different travel agencies that can see your request, and they compete to offer you the best deal. So you might get 3, 5, 7 responses, each one with details about price of the cruise, but also the amenities, the cabin types, the little extras that you might get, onboard credit, things like that.
Right.
And you get to review all of these quotes anonymously, so they don't know who you are, and they're not going to contact you until or unless you decide to contact them and give them your information. You can read about the cruises, you can read about the offers, you can also read about the agencies, see reviews of them, see their ratings from people who booked with them previously. So it makes it just a very easy way to get the best deal on the cruise that you want, without having to go around to different sites and,
right.
and try to figure out who has the best offer.
Is this process opened up to the cruise lines too? Can they compete to have you book directly with them?
If they were interested in doing that, we would certainly be interested in having them. We do have a couple of smaller lines that do that. But for the most part, the cruise lines don't really like to be seen as competing with their agents who sell their cruises.
Right.
So it's really mostly travel agents. The other thing about that, though, is the travel agents are the ones who have the best deals. They're the ones who can secure group space and really figure out all the little ins and outs of you would think that, hey, here's a cabin, specific cabin, specific ship, should always be the same price, always the same. It's not. It's a very complicated industry, and there are lots of promotions. Again, group space where agents have reserved things in advance at a lower rate. There are just a lot of little ins and outs, and a very experienced agent who's good at this stuff can really save you a lot of money.
Right, right. Yeah, actually, when I give speeches, I say that for cruising, that is one type of travel that you're smarter to use a travel agent, because those who sell a lot of cruises, not only do they reserve group space, but they also get rewarded by the cruise lines with perks to pass along to their customers that you wouldn't get if you booked directly.
Exactly. And beyond that, there are very few problems that we come across. But if you do have a problem with a cruise, you want your travel agent there advocating for you.
Right.
It's just you and the cruise line. You don't have that. And again, you're paying less and getting more. There's really no reason to go direct.
So your 2024 Cruise Trends Report, what is that based on? Call people over the phone, or did you look at the data from where people were searching, or how did you do this?
Basically, the Cruise Compete system, as people come in and put in their requests for what they're looking for, we have all of that data. So we get about, this year will probably be around 250,000 quote requests from consumers. And so we're looking at that data of what people are asking for, which cruise lines, whether they're luxury, premium, river. We're looking at when they're traveling. We're looking at things like that. And these all go into our reports that we put together. And it's just a good way for people to understand the industry and what's going on out there.
Well, one thing that worried me about this, you say that, for example, the river cruises, Viking came out on top. Wouldn't Viking come out on top because it has triple the number of ships as the competition?
Certainly a possibility. But also Viking is the reason they have triple the number of ships is because they can fill them.
Huh.
You know, they have the budget to advertise, and they certainly have a wonderful product.
Sure.
From everything that I've heard. But yes, I can't, you know, as far as this goes, all we can really do are draw conclusions based on what people are asking for.
Sure.
And how many. So that's basically what this report is.
Well, and there was a surprise here in the category you call premium contemporary, which I'd call mainstream cruise lines. Royal Caribbean beats Carnival. And I know that I'm pretty sure that Carnival has more ships, right?
Yes. And there you come to a little bit of the bias in our data. Again, this is based on people who are coming to cruise compete and requesting quotes. The people who come to our site tend to be much more experienced cruisers. They tend to be people who've been on more cruises. They tend to be, frankly, smarter shoppers. Because once you come to cruise compete and you realize you can go to one spot, in 2 minutes, put in a quote request and then compare prices and offers. That's where you're going to do your cruise shopping from then on.
Sure.
Fine. Carnival caters up to a lot more people who are, who have less experience cruising,
huh,
who are more newcomers to the, to this section of travel.
Sure.
And beyond that, it's also, they also tend to have a lot more, cheaper short cruises. The other thing too here is this, the higher the dollar cruise, the more you're going to save by going through Cruise Compete, because there's just more, there's more in the deal. And there are more, you know, there are more ways to save. If you're doing a 3-night cruise on an off date, if the whole cruise is only costing you $400 or $500, there's not a lot of savings there.
Sure.
But really, it comes down to experience. The people who use Cruise Compete are much, much more experienced than most of the, most of the folks out there. And they tend to, and Royal is just a more popular line among them.
Sure.
Personally, I love Carnival. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think it's a really great value for your dollar. But, again, I'm not necessarily the exact profile of folks coming to our site.
Right. And this was another surprise. Under the most popular specific ships for luxury cruise liners, the Queen Elizabeth. That really surprised me. I thought that was very much a niche market of people going across the Atlantic from New York to London and or back. And I never thought that would come out on top.
Well, the thing about that is, you certainly hear more people talking about, say, Oceania than you would about Cunard. But on the other hand, it's a big boat. It's a big ship.
I guess
so. Most of the luxury liners, they're small. People want that 350 passenger experience, 600 passenger experience. That probably has to do with it. The other side of that coin, though, is, if you're really a traditional, want to experience traditional cruising, there is just some cachet about the Queen Elizabeth, about the Cunard.
Sure, absolutely. And another surprise was, for what I call mainstream brands, the premium month is not a month when kids are out of school. The premium month was May. That was mind-blowing, because when I think of people going on Carnival, on Royal Caribbean, I think of people traveling a lot with their children. And yet we're seeing a lot of people searching for May, and kids are going to be in school in May. So does this signify a demographic shift?
Well, I think this also might have to do with the folks who are using Cruise Compete versus perhaps what the overall market is. The more experienced a cruiser you are, the more likely you are older. And they're just, it's a great month to cruise. If you think about it, the prices are good.
Yeah.
The weather's good. You're past spring break.
So are the prices still good if everybody's requesting May?
Well, everybody on Cruise Compete's requesting May. that's a slice of the demographic that might not be overly represented.
Sure. The most popular cruise ports visited. How do you know this from your data? I mean, you say Coco Cay, which is one of those private islands?
Yes. Well, it's just fairly simple. For every itinerary that we have, we know what all the ports are on that particular itinerary. And then all we're doing is a total number of requests. And for each request, you know, you might have one, might have two ports, might have five ports, might have seven ports. But for those requests, we are simply tallying which ports are coming out on top.
Sure.
We're very heavy, strong on Royal Caribbean. Royal Caribbean goes to Coco Cay a lot.
Huh.
So that ends up being, you know, the most popular port. Is that to say that when people are going to book a cruise, they go, okay, I need to find something that goes to Coco Cay? Probably not.
Right.
But that said, for the folks requesting on our site, that's what it breaks down to. That ends up being the most popular port selected in the quote request that we're getting.
Well, it's all very interesting, and thank you so much for appearing on the Fromer Travel Show to break it down for us.
Happy to anytime. And Pauline, I will say, Cruise Compete celebrated its 20th anniversary in September of last year. And our big break was, I think you were the first person in the press to notice us.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I mean, we launched September 15th, and I think before of 2003, and I think before October, you had an article out about us, and that was really what gave us our first big push and launch.
Oh, well.
So I remain eternally grateful to you, and I'm happy to appear on help you in any way that I possibly can, because, debts should be paid and respected.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very sweet. Yeah, we were one of the very first websites for travel on the web, Fromers was. You know, people think of us as an old-time book publisher, but we actually were pioneers on the web, too, and I was the first editor. So that's great. All right, thanks again. When the pandemic was in full force, a surprising thing happened. A lot of people turned to camping for their vacations. And I think everybody in the travel industry assumed this was going to be a short-lived trend. Boy, oh boy, were we wrong. I have Kevin Long as my next guest. He is the CEO of The Dyrt, which is spelled D-Y-R-T. And he's here to discuss a massive new study. It's the 2024 Dyrt Camping Report. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much for appearing on the Fromer Travel Show.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me first how this study was done.
So the Dyrt annual camping report put out by the Dyrt and Toyota is the most comprehensive study of what is happening in the world today in the camping vertical in the U.S. You know, we have at the Dyrt over 30 million annual visits. We're the number one ranked app. So we feel like we're in a good position to do this report. This report looks at everything from private campground camping behavior to public campground camping behavior to private landowners and campground owners. The survey itself got over 7,000 camper responses from within the Dyrt community. And then in partnership with Toyota, we surveyed nationally as well and got over 1,000 responses. And within all of that, we made sure that we also got responses from private property campground landowners across all 50 states. So it's an extremely comprehensive survey.
So you talk to both the campers and the people who are putting them up for the night.
Yep.
And I guess the big headline is, it's gotten hard to find room, not at the inn, but just on the damn ground right now.
Yep.
It's a little easier than last year. Break it down for us.
Yeah. So, there's a couple different things you can look at. First of all, there's the popularity of camping. Our survey showed that over 84 million Americans camped in 2023. 5.5 million Americans of those Americans camped for their first time ever. But if you look at since 2021, you have 20 million Americans that have camped for their first time ever. So every year, not only do you have, 80 plus million Americans going camping, you have over 5 million new people coming into that world for their first time ever in camping. So that overall number continues to grow year over year.
Now, let's unpack that before we go any further. You don't study why that is, but I'm sure you have some hunches. Obviously, during the pandemic, people were nervous about being indoors. They were nervous about being in confined spaces with other folks. And so I think that's what helped people move towards camping. Is it inflation now, or is it that people discovered how great it was to camp? What do you think is the reason why this hasn't gone back to pre-pandemic numbers?
Well, one thing is, you know, unlike going like, let's say, hiking, you know, and some activities like that, one of the hurdles for camping is getting over that first step, buying that first tent, buying that camping vehicle, or just even going out and renting them and trying it for the first time. But once people have that, once you have that asset, oh, I have a tent, I can go camping again. I have this camping vehicle, I can go camping again. That's what we see is the big thing. And so what's cool about what we're seeing is these millions of people are trying it for the first time, getting those camping gear set and ready to go. And sure. It makes it a lot easier to go again and again and again.
Huh. Interesting. Because you also look at what the average annual income is of people who are camping. And it's not just folks who are, you know, scraping their finances together. It's up to $250,000 a year. Those folks are driving RVs just as much as the other folks are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we definitely see a split of that, right? Like camping remains one of the most economically easy on your wallet vacations you can possibly do. But we're also just seeing a rise in the growth of people having recreational vehicles, everything from just a really simple trailer they're pulling behind their car all the way up to a, you know, multi several hundred thousand dollar vehicle.
Right. And when these folks are driving up to campgrounds, especially the campgrounds that don't take advanced reservations, 45% are being turned away or are reporting that they've been turned away. Now, that's down from 58% in 2022. So why is it slightly down? And what should somebody do if they want to make sure they have a place to park?
Well, so first thing that one thing that I thought was really interesting, because I've done a lot of this over time, is first come, first serve camping. For first come, first serve camping, just to clarify that for everyone, that's either a campground that has some spots that you're not allowed to reserve them in advance, or the entire campground, you're not allowed to reserve them in advance. First come, first serve campgrounds were twice as likely to be full in 2023 as they were in 2020. In 2023, the percent of campers who said that they arrived and there was the first come, first serve options were full. 23% of people responded and said that that happened to them this last year. Take an example, the year before, it was 21%. In 2021, it was 15%. And in 2020, it was 11%.
Wow.
So you can see those percentages every single year. You know, you can almost see it perfectly on a chart. It's getting harder and harder to just count on, well, don't worry, they have first come, first serve sites. We'll get one of those. So that's
tragic because, you know, that's part of the fun of camping. You can drive until you're tired and then find a place to stay because there are so many first come, first serve options, but maybe that's not the wise strategy anymore.
What we say is a wise strategy. Number one, use the dirt. You can imagine I'm biased.
But in
fairness, we're the only one that has a mobile app that has all the state parks, national parks, and private RV parks, and private property, and free camping. We're the only ones crazy enough at the dirt to do it all and list it all. And so what we tell people is have your three backups ready to go, especially if you're not going to do a reservation in advance. So great, you're going to do first come, first serve. Make sure you use the dirt and find multiple options of first come, first serve. And by the way, what is a private land that maybe you normally wouldn't camp at, but you know they have availability? That's a good option. And then your third option is always free camping on public land. And know where you can go and know what areas you can go. So then you have those options set up. If you have those options set up, even with the popularity of camping, you're still going to get a spot and have a great vacation.
Now, I'm not sure I understand what you mean when you say private land camping. What is that?
Yeah, good question. We have just seen glamping just absolutely explode in the last few years. So you have, you know, the traditional in the last couple of decades, right? You have RV parks that you go to, and then you have the government, you know, state parks, national parks. This new class of properties that have been coming on really quickly is people who have private land and they open it up for people to camp, whether that's temp campers or RVers. Hey, I have, you know, 20 acres on my ranch. Come check it out. Some are very basic, primitive, you know, have basic services like outhouse and garbage and whatnot, water. Others sure. have that. Plus, they scale all the way up to glamping sites where they're going to throw a safari tent with, you know, nice heated cushion cots or like a glamping dome. Huh. And so there's everything in between. And private land is just, it's really fun to watch that continue to grow.
Do the people who rent out places on private land need some kind of license to do this?
Yeah, so every state is different and every state has different regulations on it. And it's, I'd say it's kind of going through the same thing that Airbnb did back in the day. And some people are doing it and then they need to catch up with licenses and whatnot. But you're seeing more and more regulation come into play on the state and the county level.
And one of the things that caught my eye in your study was an increase in people camping for free. Recently, I was editing a book on New Zealand. And in New Zealand, the RV lifestyle is huge. And the government sponsors campgrounds that are free. And yep. so it's a really, really affordable, great way to see the country. Such a great way that we actually included an itinerary to be done by RV.
Yep.
How much of the camping in the United States is free? And is it camping most of us would want to do? Or are you squatting in the parking lot behind, I don't know, the Walmart?
No, it's a good question. And, you know, so just recently, I'm on a road trip with the co-founder, my wife and co-founder, Sarah Smith of the Dirt. And we were coming back from California. And we did everything from free dispersed camping on government land in the Bureau of Land Management. And we have in the Dirt app, you can push a button on the map and it gives you a map boundary where you can see with your GPS, am I in a forest area that is government land that is legal to camp? And you can camp anywhere in there. And it's incredible. You want to get some wide space. You want to get away from people like... Talk about an amazing camping experience, especially if you have a vehicle and some, you know, amenity and services with you. It's awesome.
So there wouldn't necessarily be, say, showers there or other facilities, but if you're an RV, it doesn't matter that much.
So there's two things with this. For the most part, when it comes to free dispersed camping, yes, it is pack in and pack out. You got to be prepared to be able to do this. You are just on open land. There is another thing, though, that a lot of people don't realize is There are about, let's say, 3,000 to 5,000 campgrounds in the U.S. that are established that have outhouse facilities, trash, sometimes even have running water on pumps, and they're completely free to stay at. And those are on the Dirt in the Free Camping Collection if anyone would like to find those.
Okay. And there also are Walmart parking lots, right?
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. On the way home, we stayed at probably two different nights. We stayed at a Walmart parking lot. Another night, we stayed at a travel center parking lot. And this is because, hey, we're doing long days. We only had 2 days to get home. We needed to drive for like 11 hours a day. At that point, we're just going to crash for 5 hours in the back of our van. No big deal. You open up the Dirt. You look at free overnight parking filter. You find all the locations that they allow you to park for free. Again, it's, you know, leave no trace rule. These facilities are really great that they allow us to do this. And we like to encourage people to service, use a Walmart and go buy something, fill up your gas at the travel station, etc. But that's a really great thing that people should realize. There's thousands of retailers across the U.S. that let you park one night for free.
Now, during the one time in my life when I've done an RV, I did it when my kids were small. We had a ball, actually. We went to the Grand Canyon in Sedona. Cool. And it was really lovely. I was amazed at how suddenly we weren't just driving an RV. We suddenly became part of a community with a whole community of kids that I hadn't expected. So my kids had instant playmates. But I remember we had to learn how to hook up that RV to water, to power. We had to dump the stuff in it. I mean, there were a lot of things we had to do to take care of the vehicle. that you couldn't do, I'm assuming, if you're in a parking lot. So if you're doing, or even on public land, that is very basic. So does the dirt give you options just for, you know, shooting some energy into your vehicle?
Yep. So the Dirt Pro also has a filter that you can turn on, and you can find out all your water stations when you need to refill your water in your RV. We also have a filter you can turn on the map and see all the dump stations across the U.S. if you need to get rid of your waste, dump in an appropriate place, and then get back on the road. So those are definitely important things when you're on the road of, hey, you want to know where all the great places to camp are. You want the reviews. But you also need these services. Maybe you just need one night overnight in a parking lot for 5 hours to crash around the road. The dirt can help you, and you can refill your water, dump your gray tank, and you're off to the races.
Now, what about winter camping? I was so surprised to read that a third of your respondents said that that's when they were getting out on the road and camping. I'm assuming that's mostly people in RVs rather than tents, right?
You are seeing a lot more RVs and trailers out there in the winter. You know, what is starting to happen now is, and this is a lot of this is coming from private landowners selling their campgrounds to the next generation or giving it to their kids, and the next generation is coming up. And these next generations are getting really smart. They're getting savvier on where to promote their campgrounds on places like the dirt in order to get more bookings. They're also realizing that camping is up and demand is up and people want to camp and people have vehicles that doesn't really matter if it's not perfect weather out. And they're shrinking down that shoulder season where historically, maybe in previous decades, it was, let's close up shop for 3 months and the family that owns a campground heads down south. Now those younger generations they're opening the campgrounds for longer because they know they can fill them.
Yeah, it's fascinating how this boom is reshaping how we travel. You said the United States is very camping curious. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are too. If some of them want to get into, say, RVing, what's the advice? Do you buy the rig or do you rent it? Or what's the best way to dip your toe into this type of travel?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you brought up the services of the RVs for the first timers, because when you're dealing with what's known in the RV world as the stinky slinky, the tube that you got to deal with for your wastewater, it is terrible the first time you're trying to figure that out. You know what you can do as a first time camper? Number one, think about going glamping. Look for places that are tiny homes on campgrounds or a dome hut you can rent. Or, you know, something simple like a safari tent. That's a first option. But if you're like, I really might want to take my spin at an RV. Okay, here's the next big trend that we're seeing. And I'm surprised how popular this keeps getting year over year, is that you can rent an RV on any of the RV rental sites. There's RV Share is awesome. Outdoorsy is awesome. But you can pay a little bit extra and have that RV delivered to the campground. So you just go to the campground. You don't have to worry about driving a, you know, 30-foot vehicle for the first time and dealing with it. And then they pick it up after you're done, right? That's a good way to start. The other thing that I'd say, though, is, oh my gosh, there is such a variety out there for you to rent. Rent it before you buy it. Use it. You know, yes, it's not cheap to rent these vehicles because these vehicles aren't cheap to buy. So they're you know, it's costly to rent them. But getting
Costlier than an Airbnb or a hotel room nowadays, is it?
That's a good point. That's a good point. And you pack people into that and you're going to save money even more. That's a really good point. It's costly compared to going
what it used to be.
And paying $30 to rent a campground for the night.
Right. Sure.
You know, but I mean, how great is that? Go try 3 different vehicles and actually use them on the road before you go make this major purchase, which a lot of times is like someone's taking on another mortgage, right, to buy these vehicles.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's a really good option.
I didn't see this in your study, but is there one sector of the country that is getting overcrowded in terms of camping? Is there one sector that maybe you don't go to for your first time? And is there an alternative you would recommend?
It's a good question. I'd say it's more of when you look at some of like the top five biggest metropolitan cities, you're going to have more, you're going to have more competition. You know, I lived in San Francisco years ago. It was like the Hunger Games to get out of the office by like 3:50 and be on the road and just battle through to beat the traffic out of town. Right. And it's the same thing in the big cities like Denver, Seattle, you know, and getting out there with the major population areas. You just got to be a little bit creative. You got to be able to go farther, and you got to have your different backups ready to go.
Right. Well, all good advice. Thank you so much for appearing on the Frommer Travel Show.
Absolutely. Super fun to be here.
Looks like we have another show in the can. I thank you so much for listening. And to those who are traveling, may I wish you a hearty bon voyage. I'll see you next week.
Watching cable.